Watch me bend over, look what I undertake. Till I don't try,
I don't try,
I don't try.
Testing, testing. Okay. So I am driving once again, or it wouldn't be a Rish Outcast, would it? I think this will be another episode where I talk. I don't know if I'll just stick it in with an episode that's got a story with it, or if I'll start to do every other episode has a story, and the in-between ones are just me talking. Honestly, there's not a lot of people that listen to this, so I may have said it before, it's kind of like a journal, which is fine. If nobody at all listened to it, I could at least go back and listen to my journal entries. And because I don't keep a physical journal anymore, it's either my blog or podcasting. And boy, you can say so much more in podcasting than you can typing things up. I mean, for example, I've been talking for just over a minute, and it would probably take 20 minutes to type all this junk up. Well, that may be an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. I would agonize over what phraseology to use, and you've got spelling and formatting and all that. It's just, blogging is easy, but just talking as I'm going somewhere is so much easier. Which is why it's disappointing that Big doesn't do more of his ankle cast. He was kind of an inspiration to me, the fact that he would just start his machine recording and talk, and then he would put it out like the next day. I was like, wow, I could do that. And thus far, I don't think I have done that. I always at least do one pass of editing, partly because I just can't stand and sniffles and stammers and me saying, what was I saying? And a lot of my Rish Outcasts are that. So anyhow, the main reason I think I am recording right now is that today I was reading an article on Deadline.com, which is a Hollywood industry news site. It's kind of like the Hollywood Reporter or Daily Variety. Used to be with industry news in a magazine. Deadline has kind of become that for scoops and for deals that are getting made and announcements, you know, when a relevant casting decision has been made or, an announcement from a studio. That's where I tend to see it the most. And I've been away from LA for a while now, years now, and yet I'm still a little bit connected to that. I still care how well a movie opened. I still care if somebody, you know, gets fired from some project or somebody is announced as a director of something. And I imagine that I'll always be a little bit interested in that, even though I'm not in that daily grind anymore. But today I saw an article about one of the cast members of Saturday Night Live that I like being cast in a movie. And I clicked on the article, and it had a list of three, or maybe it was even four, named screenwriters. And one of them was a friend of mine. When I was in college, I did an internship in Los Angeles, and we stayed at the UCLA dorms. And he was my roommate, and he and I were roommates just for, 2 months or something like that? But we became pretty close, and I just loved the hell out of this guy. I was just like, wow, this guy is the coolest. Chris is kind of the guy that I wanted to be. He was really funny and really creative. And unlike me, he was fine to fail publicly. And he would, you know, get people together, and he would do projects. And sometimes they didn't work. But because he was very clever, a lot of times they would work. And it was like, wow, I want to be like this guy. And, it was before the term bromance existed, but, well, you know, I don't know if I understand the term bromance. Is there actual romantic feeling in a bromance? Or is it just like, oh, this is my best buddy, yo? What is a bromance? It's more than just a friendship, right? Is it just like heterosexuals dabbling in homosexuality? Anyhow, I saw his name as one of the screenwriters, and Chris wanted to be a director. He didn't want to be a screenwriter, but he could write. I remember one time we went to a mall in LA together, and we just talked about ideas that we had for movies. And his ideas were really out there. Like, the kind of thing where you'd be like, I've never actually seen anything like that before. Have you? And he's like, no, that's why I want to do it. Whereas my ideas, you could always say, well, it's kind of like this, only with a fat guy. And I know it's the right guy and not just another guy with the same name, because the other screenwriter, well, one of the three or four that was named, is a protege or friend or whatever you want to call it of my buddy Ian. And Ian went out to Los Angeles to become an entertainment lawyer. But in the back of his mind, he wanted to be a producer. He wanted to make movies. He wanted to be a storyteller, even though he wasn't particularly strong at writing. He was really good at like finding talent and saying, here's what you should do. And that used to bother me when I was in LA, because it's really easy to say, hey guy, here's what you should do, and then go about your life. But it's much harder to actually do it. And, you know, it's been a long time, and so maybe Ian has understood that. But I also understand he saw talent in me and he wanted to encourage that. He wanted me to be creating and working and sharing what I wrote, you know, putting it out there. And that's another reason for The Rish Outcast, is I thought, well, it'll just get easier and easier to put out what I create if I have a forum that is easy, a forum that is all on me. And it has both gotten easier and stayed hard. I published a story just the other day that I wrote probably November of last year or something like that. And it just sat. It just sat in my notebook. And let's say that I sold one copy every other month after that. That's still way more copies than... Okay. See, this is why I like to edit The Rish Outcast. Because I say things like that, and it's just stupid. Of course, selling one copy every other month is better than not selling any. Why would anybody listen to me talk? But, okay, anyhow, I typed it all up in an evening when we went camping, and I got home, and yesterday I uploaded it, and within an hour it was available for sale on smashwords.com and on amazon.com. And so, why can't I do that all the time? I had a goal in 2014 to put up a story a week. And there were a couple of times when I put up more than one story a week. And then there were a couple of times when I didn't put up a single story in a month. And so I didn't accomplish my goal, but I'm trying. This podcast, I have such lofty goals for it. I was thinking I would podcast publish a long work. I would sit down in like two nights and record an entire novella, and then I'd break the novella up into like four parts and publish them weekly, of me just reading and performing all the characters and saying at the end of each episode, hey, this story is available on Amazon.com if you would like to buy it. And when I'm all done with this, it will be available on Audible.com if you would like to pay to listen to it. That's in the back of my mind, something that I could do, but I haven't. I want to do that sort of thing, partly because I talked to Scott Sigler, and that was his business model. He would have a weekly podcast, I think it came out every Sunday, in which he would read like another chapter or two chapters from a novel that he had written. And he would let people know, hey, if you want to go out and buy this novel, you can do that, or you can join me next week for a couple more episodes, a couple more chapters, and you can enjoy it that way. And he said that people listened to the whole thing for free, and then they would buy the copy as like a thank you. You know, as like a, I enjoyed this very much. Here's your tip, or maybe I can share this with someone else, or here's encouragement to keep it up. Now, granted, Scott Sigler got in on this at the very beginning when people weren't doing this. And he said that publishers said that that's madness. Why would you do, why don't give something away for free? That's crazy. And now apparently he does quite well, and he's also paid to go places and talk about his business model and talk about what he's done. And he encouraged me in his speech. It's not like he and I had sat down and had this conversation one-on-one. We probably exchanged 10 words one to another. But he had a panel that I was on and he was on. And he had his own presentation where he just talked about what he did. And he, that part of it was, I'm sure, go out there, say some words that will encourage creative people to do what you have done. And it certainly had that impression on me, that impact on me. I heard what he said and I thought, I could do this. I'm already a podcaster. I already have a little group of listeners that like what I do. I already know how to self-publish. What is stopping me from doing more or doing it better, or maybe just doing it steadily is the secret. This isn't actually what I wanted to talk about. What I wanted to talk about was how I felt when I saw my friend's name in an article on Deadline Hollywood. You know, he's gone out there and he's making it happen all these years later. Now, he went out there and he had a screenplay and he was going to finance a movie himself, and I think he did end up doing this. And it was a really low-budget flick, and I don't know that it got any exposure or whatever, but that's a hell of a lot better than I did. But here he is all these years later. His name shows up again, which leads me to believe he did not give up on his dreams. He did not go home with his tail tucked between his legs. He didn't cash in his chips and say he was out. And it made me feel small to know that. I should have felt good to see his name and go, oh, hey, he's making a go of it. He's living the dream, as they say. And a part of me feels that way. I love the guy. I am happy that he is working. I am happy that he is succeeding. But I can't help but compare me and him and recognize that I'm not doing as well. And see, that's not fair. Because it's apples and oranges. He is in Hollywood trying to make movies. I'm just a writer trying to, I don't know, make money off of my writing? Maybe that's what I'm doing. I don't know. In 2013, I made the decision to be an audiobook guy, to try and make money that way. And I think I'm really good. But it may be that my writing has suffered. Certainly my output is less than it would be if I didn't have all these deadlines and all these projects I was supposed to work on. The hope is that I start bringing checks in, I continue to work, and I continue to write, and eventually the checks are big enough that it's my job. And yeah, it's doubtful that that's going to be the case, but if I keep putting stuff out, let's say that I put out 100 stories, which seems like a giant number, but I've got 100 stories. I've got 100 stories that I would dare share with other people. And if one of those stories sold, if somebody bought a copy of every single one of those stories in a month, that's still not making a living, is it? Maybe there is no happy ending. Not for me anyway. Should I stop pretending? The truth of the matter is, I gave up on screenwriting. I thought that that was also a thing that I did very well. And I quit. I wasn't willing to play the game. I wasn't willing to answer to people that said, this isn't what I'm looking for. Change this, this, and this, and then we'll talk again. Wow, this has become really introspective. But that's okay. Whoops. There's such a thing as Schadenfreude, which is delight at other people's pain. And there's probably an opposite. Well, it's not quite the opposite. The opposite would be misery at seeing other people. Oh, that's exactly what it is. It's the opposite of Schadenfreude. It is misery at other people's success. Where's my English-German dictionary? I don't have that entirely. I like it when people succeed because, you know, it becomes an anecdote that you can tell. It becomes a goal marker where you can say, hey, so-and-so accomplished this. I can do it too. It was like when people were running every day, or Big was losing weight, or people were writing every single day. It's like, well, I can do that too because so-and-so made it happen. Seeing success in the people around you is a good thing. I'm not saying that it isn't. There are people I know who are doing quite well with their writing or their podcasting. And that's inspiring too. And yet at the same time, I do ho-hum when I hear that. When I find out that somebody made $1,000 off of a book that they published by themselves, I go, holy crap, $1,000? I could never do that. That's not fair. When my attitude should be, I can do that, I will do that. That makes me want to try harder to sell my own stuff. Now, granted, there's a difference between short story writing and novel writing. Isn't there? Maybe there isn't. I don't know. I keep thinking that there is a difference between it, but that difference may be all in my head. I don't know. Let's talk about this more. Big and I were talking about the likelihood you have of dying in a car accident versus, well, anything else, basically, except for a motorcycle accident today. And he was just talking about how in the summertime, the fatalities go way, way up. And I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense because, you know, November or December, when people are driving, you know, out of town and there might be bad weather and they're going, you know, to visit the relatives and they hit some black ice. But he said, no, the summer, the 3 summer months or the 100 days of summer or whatever are the most lethal because the weather is nice, people go way faster than they need to go. And so when they get in an accident, death. Thought, well, that's really interesting. That's something to think about. And he was just talking about, you know, how many little kids die because they weren't belted in properly and the kid goes flying, and how many stories he edits that are about that. And it made me think of today. I was driving my nephew around and he wouldn't wear his seatbelt, and because I understand that, you know, it's restrictive and he's not able to see the cars and stuff if he's sitting back and squished down there, so I let him not wear his seatbelt just because I wanted to be a buddy. And but after hearing Big talk about that, I was like, you know what, I was doing that kid no favors. I've got to not do that anymore. Anyway, I don't know how I got on this subject, because I did a U-turn against a red light, which I don't think you're allowed to do, but it's the middle of the night and there's nobody else around, so I figured I was safe in doing it. But Big and I got together and we talked. Oh, and anyhow, I talked to him a little bit about the opposite of Schadenfreude that I feel. And he said, let's call that Freudenscheude, when you feel displeasure at the success of others. He said, you know, if we had more time to do an episode, that gets my go. Because I wanted to do an episode where we talked about it, you know, to ask him, do you feel that too? And I'm not sure if he does. I mean, to a certain extent, maybe. Anyhow, I wanted to talk to him about Freudenscheude and we just talked for a little while about the things that other people have accomplished and looking around and saying, you know, somebody's show has so many more fans, or, you know, he's been doing this live blogging thing. Not live blogging, but like a blog writing thing where he writes a little bit of a story each day. And he made a post where he said, you know, this is day 8 or whatever. I just wanted to know if people are enjoying this, if people are paying any attention. If you are reading it, just, you know, put a little comment. It doesn't even have to be anything of substance. It can just one word. And nobody posted anything. And he's just like, oh, what's the point of living? And then 3 days later, he discovered that he had posted black text on black background. So you couldn't see the post at all that was asking people to check and see if they had read his post. Well, even if people tried to read it, how could they? Anyhow, Big and I were talking a little bit about this and about feeling dejected or not good enough because nobody buys certain stories or nobody reads the blog or nobody loves us the way that they love other people, or that we don't make money for our writing compared to other people. But there are people out there that really like what we do. Now, there's not a lot of them, but good people out there that contribute a lot of work to help us do the Doonstief, and for free. You know what I mean? Anything that Big and I make off the Doonstief doesn't trickle down to other people. Now, granted, we basically make enough money to pay for our hosting costs, our domain name. It paid for this microphone, I believe. So, you know, we don't really make a profit doing the Doonstief, but there are people that are passionate about it and really look forward to each episode and let us know that they dig it. And the people who let us know are probably in the minority. So there might be people out there that love the show that don't ever mention it, that we will never hear from, but they love it. And that means something. I realize this is a tangent, but we talked for a long time, hours and hours. We went for a walk. We probably ended up walking 3 miles or more, which is so nice in the summertime to be able to walk, to get some exercise, to feel the breeze on you, to just be reminded that you're alive. Anyway, one of the things that we talked about was he was talking about children's entertainment and how you write something for a child, or you make something for a child, and you know that they don't have a lot of life experience. They don't have a lot of taste. They don't know when something is crap and when something is good, necessarily. So a lot of times people don't even try. They just put out whatever is easiest. They punch a time clock and get it done, and here it is. And if it sucks, it sucks. But I don't care, because I get paid either way. But every once in a while, somebody will make something for children and really put their heart in it, or put their whole soul in it, or at least try, at least work a little harder than is necessary. And we were talking about the Transformers and how ostensibly in 1984, they made this cartoon series, or first I guess it was a Marvel comic that exploited a Japanese Japanese toy lines, and then, you know, they were going to make a comic book of it, and they were going to make a cartoon of it just to sell toys. And yet somebody, I think his name is Bob Budiansky, put in so much work and effort and thought and heart and personality into it that I still love those characters all these years later. This is 30 years later. And we were talking about the Michael Bay Transformers movies, and I guess Optimus Prime, the character of Optimus Prime, is so wrong that, I mean, we were talking about, I guess, something that happens in one of those movies that I wasn't really aware of, But when I heard about it, I was upset. Like, way more upset than I had any right to be. And, yeah, okay, it reminds me a little bit of another childhood hero of mine that I felt was really done a disservice in a movie and that I rip on a lot. I was just kind of horrified. I was like, no, no, why would they? And Big said to me, dude, that's not Optimus Prime. Don't worry. That's Armageddonmas Prime. Just put it out of your mind. It's not the same guy. And maybe we'll have to cut this out. It's an outtake because it doesn't have to do with anything. Oh, I guess we were talking about putting your heart and soul into something that you don't have to. I was surprised at the extreme reaction that I had about this fictional character, again, made to sell toys. And I tried to examine that mentally of why do I care? Why do I feel something for this character? And it sort of just taps into why you want to be a writer, why you want to be a creative person and tell stories. Because you were moved, or you were impressed upon, or you were excited or drawn up into a story when you were young and impressionable, and you would like to pay it forward. You would like to be able to do that for somebody else. To somebody else? That sounds odd. I don't know that anything I have written or anything I have done is ever going to matter to someone the way that the Transformers meant to me 30 years ago. Again, it's the opposite of Schadenfreude. See, now I'm saying it wrong, thinking it wrong. I don't know that I'm as good as some of those other people out there. Abby forwarded me an email about somebody was reading Hunter's Unlucky, her book, to their kids. And she was talking about how into it the kids were. And Abby forwarded that to me, and it didn't make me feel bad. Not in the way that I felt reading my friend's name on an article about a movie getting made. But maybe it's like what Scott Sigler was talking about. And if I work a little harder, if I dedicate myself a little bit more, maybe I can touch somebody or move somebody or impress upon somebody something. I can make them feel something with my art. If I don't share it with anyone, that's never going to happen. This show or podcast, The Rish Outcast, reaches almost nobody. I understand that, and I'm not whining, although maybe I am, about it so much as it's my own fault, because we don't ever mention it on the show. Whenever I try and sell a story on Amazon, I don't say you can listen to Rish's ramblings on The Rish Outcast and give an address. I could put out more episodes and I could be more vocal about the episodes so that people would at least know that it's out there and more people would listen to this and maybe more people would buy the stuff that I write. And maybe if more people bought the stuff that I write, I would share more stuff. And maybe if I was sharing more stuff, I would write more stuff. I could do better. I could work harder. I could do more. And maybe that's the lesson I need to get out of seeing the success of people around me, of seeing success of my friends. I can do it too, if I just do it. I don't know. Was I talking about doing a novella or something like that? I was talking to Big about that, and he said, oh, that would be fun. We should just record a few of each other's stories, and you can release them on Audible for people to buy if they want. Yeah, we could do that. That would be fun. just, you know, I was thinking of maybe calling up Marshall and saying, hey, can I give you a story and have you record it for the Rish Outcast? And, you know, it just be a single voice thing that, or Marshall reads the story and then I talk about it. And yeah, there's one that I would really like Renee to narrate. Although, and not to say that Marshall isn't busy. Marshall's insanely busy. But Renee just always seems to have a ton on her plate, and I feel guilty. But just between you and me, I think I feel guilty because she's a woman. And I don't feel guilty asking Marshall to do stuff because he's a guy. Is that weird? It's like, if there was a part that I wanted Marshall to voice on a Doonstief episode, I'd just send him an email and say, hey, here, do this for us, please. But if there was a female part, I would feel all, oh, shoot, I wonder if Renee thinks we take too much advantage of her. Isn't that weird? I mean, that explains a little bit of why I'm so alone in the world, I guess. Anyhow, I guess that's digression, like, number 8. I think it would be fun if I worked harder on this show or put out more episodes. I don't know about worked harder. It goes hand in hand, though. If you work harder on something, it means you get it done faster. You get it done faster, you can put out more. I've got so many commitments right now for audiobooks, and all it would really take is me just buckling down and saying, I'm going to work for an hour tonight on this, and then I'm going to work for a half hour tonight on that. And tomorrow, it's going to be the opposite, until these things get done. And right now, I have all these projects that are just on hold so that I can focus on Hunter's Unlucky, which is Abby's book. Because, frankly, I like Abby's book better. And also because she's more fastidious about making sure this stuff gets done. She's, not to say a taskmaster or whatever, but she's going to hold me accountable. Whereas the other people are just like, well, if he gets it done, he gets it done. It's not like he's getting paid to do it. And so if I could just buckle down and get all of that stuff done, then maybe I could work on my own kind of thing more. There's not enough hours in the day, and there's not enough days in the year to do everything. I slack off a little bit, but not a ton. Anyhow, I contradicted myself, didn't I? Because I was saying I could work harder. I can do more. And here's the thing, anybody can work harder. Anybody can do more. Even if you have an unbelievable output, you know, or putting out a book a year and a bunch of short stories and a bunch of podcasts and a bunch of sex tapes, I don't know. You can always do more. We're human beings. We fall short. Entropy is the natural state of the universe. And I shouldn't be so hard on myself. I should be happy that other people are succeeding and long to join them. And so I'm going to try and end on that note, on a positive note. I know I've talked for a long time. I'll bring you a story next week. I'll bring you a story next time. And maybe it'll... maybe it'll be a good one. Maybe it will make you feel or think or laugh or be scared. It's possible. Anything's possible, right? If you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything. That's good advice, Marty. Good night.
The Rish Outcast has been released under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. That allows you to listen to it, copy it, and share it, but not to sell it, edit it, distort it, or otherwise have your way with it. I know how you are.
This is stupid, by the way. Is it safe?
Sure. Do you trust me?
What?
Do you trust me? Oh, it's scary up here. I can show you the world. Shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, Arnold, now when did you last let your heart decide?
Well, it is hard to say.
I can open your eyes. Take you wonder by wonder, over sideways and under, on a magic carpet ride, a whole new world. Ooh, a new fantastic point of view. No one to tell us no, or where to go, or say we're only dreaming.
A whole new world, a dazzling place I never knew. But when I'm way up here, it's crystal clear that now I'm in a whole new world with you.
Now I'm in a whole new world with you.
Unbelievable sights, indescribable feeling, soaring, tumbling, freewheeling through an endless diamond sky. A whole new world.
Don't you dare close your eyes.
100,000
things. Hold your breath. It gets better.
I'm like a shooting star. I've come so far. I can't go back to where I used to be.
A whole new world.
Every turn a surprise.
With new horizons.
Every moment a red letter. I'll chase them anywhere. There's time to spare. Let me share this whole new world with you.
A whole new world.
A whole new world.
That's where we'll be.
That's where we'll be.
A thrilling change.
A wondrous place for you and me.
I gave it a little too much there at the end, didn't I?
Ah, it feels very nice up here with you.
You're a handsome man.
Yes, I know.
I'll admit it.
Oh, thank you.